On the morning of August 28, 1963, the idea of America was tested. And in the sounds of feet stepping and buses parking around Washington, D.C., there was a sign early that day that something was about to happen.
The Inspector Douglas of the police department has reported that north of K Street, it appears just as it would on a Sunday in Washington. And Sergeant Liskey reports that the bus traffic in and around the Baltimore Parkway is about normal, and bus movement within the city of Washington is normal.
It would not stay that way, a normal day. This would be no normal day in Washington, in America, or the world. For hours, the crowds gathered. A promised march on Washington, D.C. was being fulfilled. A promised march to speak of the unfulfilled promises in the U.S. Constitution. It was a grassroots event, the first of its kind national news event in America.
The singing of the national anthem from the steps of the Lincoln Memorial opens the official program now for a two-hour program this afternoon.
The speeches from the steps of the Lincoln Memorial would pull no punches. This one by activist, now U.S. Congressman John Lewis, was nearly banned.
I appeal to all of you to get in this great revolution that is sweeping this nation. Get in and stay in the streets of every city until the revolution of 1776 is complete. For in the Delta of Mississippi, in Southwest Georgia, in the Black Belt of Alabama, in Harlem, in Chicago, Detroit, Philadelphia, and all over this nation, the black mass is on the march for jobs and freedom.
A march for jobs and freedom and so much more. The 250,000 people who came to the mall 50 years ago next week brought their hopes and dreams of change and the changes they'd already made in their own communities. Whether they made it to the march or not, their work was all a piece of the grand church of moral change being built brick by brick in America, and especially on that mall. Carrie Young had made her difference in Arkansas, teaching people to read.
We realized that people couldn't read or write. So we got one of the churches to allow us to teach people how to read and write, and specifically to learn how to sign their name so when it came time to vote, they could register. One of the things that came up was the white community was trying to force people to have to fill an application out, which is where that voter education application came from. And so things like that we had to change around because we'd get word that the white Klan or whatever they call itself, they would wait till it got dark and try to come through there and bring physical harm to the different ones.
We are tired. We are tired of being beaten by policemen. We are tired of seeing our people lock up in jail over and over again. And then you holler, be patient. How long can we be patient? We want our freedom, and we want it now.
All of the people at the March on Washington carried a mission and sets of memories of attempts to march and confront authority, some that hadn't gone peacefully. John Lewis's impatience was an energy he took to a march in Montgomery, Alabama, the very next year, remembered here by protester and doctor to the injured protesters, Alfred Moldovan.
There were people streaming across a bridge, crying, limping, injured. I remember John Lewis had been beaten on the head and had a concussion. He was sent to the hospital. I crossed. I was the only one that crossed the bridge and got to the other side and went into houses to drag people out, you know, who had been gassed. I can still smell the gas, the shoes and the things laying on the side, and the goons with their clubs lining the road, you know, along with the National Guard. A horrible scene. And Dr. King came and said he would go again. And this time we marched to the edge of the bridge and knelt and prayed. That was the second march.
A chant begins, more applause. Women are waving handkerchiefs, hands are waving as they greet Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr.
Even though it was festive on the Washington Mall in August of 1963, the sense that anything could happen was on the faces, in the hearts, and in the minds and memories. Everyone knew the stakes at this march. Many of them would feel the power of white society's unwillingness to just give freedom without a fight. That realization came to Freeman Hrabowski just weeks after the March on Washington.
And we're in church that Sunday in September. The pastor gets a note and tells us that our sister church, where relatives and of sons and daughters and fathers and mothers have been bombed. I thought back to different friends, Cynthia, and I'd seen her on Friday, and I've said this before. She said, "Bye, Freeman." And I knew she went to that church. One of the girls had been given a ring that morning by her father, and they were not able to find her and then found that hand with that ring. We had nightmares for years. And I'll never forget the three coffins with the nieces, the youngest of the three, I think she was 11, McNair, in the middle, smaller. I'd never seen a coffin that small. People who were the naysayers were saying, that church was bombed, those girls were in those coffins because we went to jail. We upset things. And that's what happens. These were blacks saying that. And here's Dr. King back. And he looked into the faces of those parents and said, life is as hard as steel, as hard as steel. I'll tell you what gave me hope in the midst of the darkness. It was the first time I'd seen whites in my church. There were rabbis and priests and Baptist ministers. It was amazing. And they cried.
50 years ago, a great American in whose symbolic shadow we stand today signed the Emancipation Proclamation. This momentous decree came as a great beacon light of hope to millions of Negro slaves who had been seared in the flames of withering injustice. But 100 years later, the life of the Negro is still sadly crippled by the manacles of segregation and the chains of discrimination.
So many symbols in that march on Washington 50 years ago, far beyond the single plea for peace that has become the caption of this image of history, a caption written by Martin Luther King Jr.
My poor little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today.
The march started something 50 years ago that's still going on today, thanks to New Vision, New Voices, funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting for making these oral histories available to us, and WGBH, Boston Public Radio, for their contributions. All next week, we'll be paying tribute to the March on Washington 50 years ago with voices from some of the people who helped to organize the march.
Dr. King's message really helped me to know that I could fight and still not be violent, that I could fight with my mind and with my energies to have people learn how to respect each other and themselves.
Your memories of the March on Washington, call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. Thanks so much for listening. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.